This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Is your work on this
movie? It's entirely different because Kong is a 25-foot gorilla, and this is the arc of a chimpanzee who is reared by human beings and has also inherited a certain amount of genetic intelligence, and so it's entirely different. In fact, I mean, I think. When, Terry was working with a lot of the performers up to about a month, wasn't it, beforehand?
Yeah.
But I didn't really know I was going to be on board this job until very late on in the day. And I think everybody assumed that because I played a 25-foot gorilla, it would just be like a breeze. But obviously, gorillas and chimps and orangutans, and they move entirely differently, and have different personalities and so on. So. It's like starting from scratch on a completely different role. It's like saying, okay, King Lear or Hamlet. They're entirely different.
The two of you, I guess, must have observed that a lot of chimpanzees
a lot of videos. Just really, that's probably the best thing. Was we put videos up in the monitors in the volume where we work, and. Just try to emulate, and just go home and watch videos at night, and you see the little nuances and the little subtleties that really, I think that's really what's going to make a difference in this film with the authenticity of the movement and how these characters behave. The big stuff, the big jumps, the big leaps—that's all the easy stuff. But it's the little subtleties that are going to make a difference and make it really special, I think. So we really kind of focus on. Watching the timing and the weight and the balance and the mindset and just the rhythm of the three apes, the gorillas, the orangutans, and the chimps. And they're all so different. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
No. And also, at the end of the day, of course, it's not just about doing gorilla or chimp or orangutan movements. It's about character, and that's
exactly.
What's beautiful about this script is that it's a really highly intelligent script. And treats all of the eight characters with as much reverence as human characters. There's no kind of species separatism or kind of species preference. They're written with real integrity, with layer and depth, and that's why, well, certainly why I and Terry probably too responded
Absolutely.
To the script. I mean, it's a brilliant script, and it's a fantastic modern allegory about man's abuse of nature, and a wonderful kind of it's written with such a lot of love, the script, and I think that's the point. When we're going about researching apes and so on, you're not just looking for movement. This isn't motion capture. We're not just you could put dots on an ape and let him run wild in a studio. You get some great motion, but this is about performance. It's about making acting choices about what your character is at any step of the journey. Personally speaking, Caesar is a beautifully written character with a very, very big arc who goes from, I get to play him from the age of three years old until this very innocent chimp reared by human beings until up to a kind of Che Guevara character who's leading a revolution, basically, and with lots of very nuanced kind of moments written and crafted between us in between. So, and all of the characters, they all have layers and depths, and we're working very, very closely on each individual journey.
Yeah.
One of the things that was really interesting watching the playback were the hand extensions. And can you guys talk about sort of how you got used to using them and how you use them in character and to create the game?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's obviously a lot easier to quadruped with the arm extensions, and Weta has figured out a way to make the arms look as though they're hitting the ground, and if all we need to do with our arm extensions is just fold our wrist, and it looks as though the hand is actually, we're knuckle, walking. So, and that was something that we had to get used to, was walking on these arm extensions and getting sort of the weight and the balance and the nuance of walking with that anatomy, and we were sore for a few weeks, I'll tell you, weren't we? But it's really turned out to be an asset in a lot of ways, just because we can quadruped and then we can stand up, we can lose the arm extensions in the shot, and then use our hands, and the model, the puppet, still articulates perfectly, so we can reach up and grab something, and then put the arm extensions back on and quadruped away. So they figured out a way to really make it work for this film, and it's what was going to be what we thought was going to be a big challenge has turned out to be one of our tools that we're using. So.
Just a quick question for you. Did you look at the original films at all for any of the personality of the character?
Not so much for the personalities, but for the mythology and for the whole, and for, you know, trying to see where the writers were coming from in terms of fitting this as a prequel. And there are lots of resonances. There are so many things which pay off from the original film, and character names, character references, and just. Actually, what was really useful from watching those films, and this is an incredible documentary which Roddy McDowall narrates, actually, about the whole mythology of and the whole of the four or five films, rather. And that was really useful, just to see where we end up by the end of this, really. I mean, it's and which is why, again, it's the script. I can't tell you, you know, it landed on my desk, and I was on another shoot, and it was like. I knew it was going to be happening, but I didn't realise that when the writers came up with that draft, it was they love the franchise, they love the material, and have found a very clever way of bringing us into that story. So, I mean, it was useful in terms of plugging into the overall sensibility of the movie.
You know.
Not really movements, because they're much more advanced, they're much more bipedal. They speak, they talk, they are, in effect, they're human beings in many ways, and so their physicality is it nods towards it in the films, and we're really the step before that. We're literally kind of going from quadrupeding apes, or with Caesar, some, you know, he's a little bit more advanced, but you know, he reaches a level of intelligence which is in tune with where they're going to be heading. You know.
And it's, you've done dramatics before, you get Gollum and you get Gollum. You do a lot of dramatics, but this movie requires a lot more stunts in the mocap. You talk about, like, getting to the stunts, and Terry, I guess you talk about also getting everyone prepared to do some of these scenes, like the atrium, where we see you have to climb all the trees and stuff, how you get prepared to do that kind of stuff in the mocap.
Yeah. Well, you know, obviously we're stretching the boundaries here with some of the stuff that we're doing, and what is nice about the crossover with the mocap, with the performance capture, is we can accentuate some of the things in post, what we're going to do. Like with our fight sequence, Rocket and Caesar have this amazing fight sequence that is going to happen. We can block it out and really, you know, do the fight. But when it comes to leaping into the trees and flipping and doing the major stuff, I think the animators are going to take over that part. So we will be pretty ground based, you know, with the stunts doing this stuff. So I think the main thing that we're focusing on, because we don't have dialogue, is that the performance, the acting, the actual performance, has to be so full in our, you know, we have to be so there with our performance that. So it reads, because we're telling an audience a story with very little dialogue, and so expression and feeling and heart is our tool that we're using to, you know, to express how we feel. So the acting and the performance is really the key, I think, to this whole film.
Absolutely.
You've been at the forefront of mocap technology for. I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about some of the changes that you've observed, like, in the last decade.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, we're at a point now where, in this film, we are pushing the boundaries with relationship to a live-action shoot more than ever before. This is around 60, maybe 70% of the movie, or rather of the performance capture in the movie, is literally created on a live-action set, and that's a first. I'm not aware of any other film that's used it as much, and it's a perfect. I think this film is a perfect example of the usage of performance capture for that reason. It's you're getting dramatic performances. They are creatures which are slightly abstracted, and so it allows the actor to drive a character rather than, you know, certain movies which have used performance capture recently that have tended to make them the performance capture character look the same as the actor. You know, which for me seems a little bit, you know, a misuse of performance capture, if you know what I mean. But going back to what your question is, it's when I started working on Gollum, you know. we had a very small old tin shed basically with about six or eight cameras. You couldn't move out of a 3 meter square. It kept breaking down. You know, then you had sort of moving from just physical capture. Then you had with Kong, we started to use facial capture and, you know, wearing facial markers, and really being, you know, because Gollum was shot on 35mm, but was performance captured as well. But the facial performance was keyframe animated over and rotoscoped over my performance.
What changes would you like to see?
I think we're at a stage where we're moving away from using now, because we have head-mounted camera rigs for capturing face, and that can be a little bit conspicuous and get in the way. I think very soon, it's not going to be long, maybe 2 years, 3 years, where we're going to be entirely just filming the performances, and it will be moving away from market. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And how do you guys? You're pioneers in this. How do you make the other actors that you're working with who are not in performance capture sort of help them get into the scene? It might be tough. I'm assuming some actors who have never done this kind of work stand up against you guys. You have green dots on your faces and the gray suit. Is there sort of a trick to getting the scene going with them and making them comfortable?
You know what I think is, when we go in the volume and there's an actor that's just put on the suit for the first time, I think when they see Andy and I work together and really getting into the characters and just performing and acting and being there that they're like, wow, I don't really have to think about this stuff. I'm a puppeteer. Basically, we're puppeteers, and if you're there and you're in the character, the puppet's gonna look good. You know, it's gonna breathe life. And I think once they find out how to trust this system and just forget about it and just perform, then it's just second nature. It just becomes, yeah, well, yeah, it's easy. It's easy.
I think the life of the, you're talking about the other live action actors. Yeah, I mean, James Franco, Frida Pinto,
right.
There's just no question. They're just, you know, that we've arrived at a stage where other actors who are playing the live action characters are not phased by it in the slightest. You know, they can just see a performance going on and, okay, so we don't look the same, but I think it would be equally as strange to act against someone in a chimp suit, you know? Yeah. So it's just like, we're engaging and finding moments which are real and, you know, just happening. You're just acting with someone else, basically. And I think that's the big realisation across the board, that the whole industry is responding to the performance capture. It's no longer this strange kind of freakish activity that happens somewhere else. It's absolutely part and parcel of movie making now, and is being accepted in that regard.
How much have you spoken to? Sorry. How much have you spoken to Cooper about Caesar's future? I mean, does it go without saying that he does eventually overthrow mankind or see the rise of the apes, or does this future not necessarily set?
There has been some talk of future scenarios, but we've not talked directly about Caesar in that. You know, this, I mean, it's obviously set up for the next stage of the journey, because there is a missing link really between this film and where the original Planet of the Apes starts off. You can expand on that for I don't know. I mean, you could keep going really, but I expect that, you know, if it does go on, then Caesar will play some kind of part. He'd have to, I guess.
What are the general misconceptions about ape movements?
The general misconception about ape movements? We get called monkeys all the time.
Yeah.
We get called monkeys, and there's lots of banana jokes, and there's lots of, you know...
No more banana jokes.
Yeah. and we get treated very differently because of the way we look. It's very interesting, because we wear these suits... People treat us, you know, and funnily enough, in the Planet of the Apes documentary, they talked about the orangutans hung out with the orangutans, the chimps hung out with the chimps, and the gorillas hung out with the gorillas. And to a certain extent, there's a bit of that. We tend to knock around together, and
yeah.
You know, we're happy in our, you know, LED markers and our grey suits, and
I think that another answer to your question is the people have a tendency when they first get in the suit to overact, to try to do something, to try to be something. Rather, I think when you just go back into yourself and you become, and you just work on the subtleties and the little. If you look at apes, they're relatively still most of the time. There's a real groundedness to them, and there's a real beautiful stillness. And when you can capture that essence of just being still and present and aware and hypersensitive all at the same time, you know, where you just and then explode all of a sudden, you know. That's what I think is the biggest challenge. It's just being still and learning how to just be present in that stillness and not overdo it, not overact, not try to be anything, but just find the stillness in yourself. And that's what they have. They have this sort of hypersensitive just peace and awareness and intelligence that is beautiful.
Sorry. And also, what we're talking about here in this movie particularly is there are different levels of intelligence within the apes. Some are apes that have been brought up in zoos. Some are ex-laboratory apes. Some are still being tortured in laboratories. You know, some have inherited this.
Yes.
Some have had this drug, which is part of the cure for Alzheimer's, that Will Rodman, played by James Franco's character, is experimenting with, and so they have a raised level, like Caesar has a kind of a level. So you're looking very specifically at each different, you know, age. So that when you see them all come together, and last week we were peopling some of the other apes. You know, the great thing about performance capture is you can go off and then, without changing costume, you can become another character. So we spent like the 3 days last week putting together a whole tapestry of other minor characters in the atrium.
Yeah.
Which are, you know, you can just little vignettes, little snapshots of individual characters to people the world, so that they are all, so they're not a faceless mob of apes. Yeah. You know, they're all, and that is that one of the you know, when you start to do research into gorillas or any kind of apes, if you're going to play them, that's one of the biggest misconceptions. And when I did Kong, you know, it's like, again, you're not doing gorilla movements, you're not doing ape movements, you're looking for a personality. Because it's like saying, okay, I'm going to do human movements. You know, it's like...
It's all different. It's all individual, yeah.
Yeah, one of the things about Kong is that Peter gave you a human role as well, so we can actually see you on screen. Is there anything you kind of deal with Rupert at all, so you can kind of give any kind of background human role in this at all? You're just playing...
I was offered a role. I turned it down because I didn't particularly like the role, one of the roles, but in all honesty, Caesar is such a great character that I knew I'd have my hands full enough playing that role, you know. And there's no need to play some sort of on-screen character.
Have you been doing sign language yourself?
We have a sign language teacher, yeah. We have a sign language
gonna be
teacher.
Like CGADR later on with Caesar's hands. Do you like mark your fingers for like?
Well, we're doing it on set. We're doing it in the you know, there's, yeah. I mean, it's all captured. The great thing is it's all captured on set. You know, but when you touch something, it's there. It's in the, it's, you know, we're doing some stuff up in the volume, but the majority of it is live action.
Yeah, there's cameras capturing the movement that we're doing, what we're in the space, and then we're also on film, 35mm film, and there's also reference cameras all throughout the room. So everything that we do is recorded and stored away so that the animators can go back and look at the little things, the little twitches, or whatever it is, to really capture the moment.
Is there a different series of rigs for that? Because sometimes the hand animation in this seems to be a little bit more complex part of the process. So if you're doing something that's signing, you get different rigs for your hands. You would if you were running around swinging.
Well, because they're using a lot of the witness cameras, we're wearing finger markers while we're shooting live action. We probably won't have to go and repeat. We won't have to repeat it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that made Special Planet of the Apes really work was that with this upside down world where humans were slaves and the apes were their cruel overlords. You're playing the character who's going to usher that world in. You're our hero. So how do you sort of keep the sympathy of the character whose destiny is to subjugate every single person sitting in this tent?
It's a really good question, and I think the thing is we're playing him. You do see his journey from being, or how he responds to brutalization and witnessing brutalization and bullying. And all these shocking things, because he's brought up as an innocent, he's quite innocent, and you see his journey from innocence into, you know, into moments of realizing that actually it can be a cruel world out there. And you know, he is being brought up, because Will, James Franco's character and John Lithgow's character, they are you know, they're incredibly humanitarian, and you know, he's been brought up in a loved family as a child. You know, you just got to apply it to, in a way, you've got to forget that he's a chimp. You treat him as a child who's been brought up in a loving environment, then suddenly being subjected to brutalization and seeing all these seeing when they go to the ape sanctuary. You know, it could be any institution which has bullying and mistreatment and some kind of person who's dominating and subjugating other people. So it's like you will feel sympathy, because you will see how this young mind is witnessing brutalization of that. You know.
Do you think that's the key to this film? The fact that each ape really is its own character, and you guys are really creating these specific characters, so it's not just sort of an obligatory group of apes?
Absolutely.
That will be the strength of it.
That's it. That's the strength of this film, I think, is it's a very intelligent script, and the characters, each of the characters in the film, the apes, are individuals, and they're unique, and they come from a different background. Some have been tortured for years, and some are ex-circus chimps, and they all have a personality and a trait and a strength that comes together and makes this team that is led by Caesar. And once they're genetically enhanced, it's almost as if this sort of bright-eyed innocence is changed, and they start to become thinking and more human, and you see that the more human they become, the less innocent they are, and it's sad, but you know, you're rooting for them at the same time, but they are losing this innocence by becoming more human. So there's a lot of messages in there about, you know, humanity and you know, where we're going.
I've been researching videos on the documents about the apes, which are using the sign language, how they behave, how they express their feelings.
Yeah, a bit. We watched a lot of videos on gorilla videos, you know, with the signing, and a lot of the, you know, just physical language of chimps that have been, you know, held in these cages, in these sanctuaries, basically, that have been experimented on for, you know, 20, 30 years, and then just cast away. You know, they're just basically prisoners. And what they're, with, you know, they're messed up in the head. They're like deranged, you know, people that have been tortured their whole lives. So they're, you know, they're like, it's like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, what you were talking about. You know, it's like, we got a bunch of just really wacky individuals that are, you know, united in this film. So.
Okay. Oh, they need you upstairs.
Okay.
Sorry, we've got to go upstairs. It may be a tight fit, but if we want to, you're going up to the volume, yeah? Right? We can get a peek at the volume. We can't really linger there. But we'll let these guys go. We'll trail up behind. And collect the recording devices.
So I've got Eddie and
then we'll go from there. We're going to go back to Huntsucker's backyard.